Gentlemen, we are short of a quorum, but we have a lot of bills on the agenda, as you can see. We're going to hear these bills, and then later we will assemble a list, and we will approve the list. So we will not be voting on these bills one by one today. We'll just be hearing about them. We're going to limit testimony to 5 minutes or a little less, and we will get started and call a meeting to order when we have a quorum. First bill up is House File 1699. Representative Murray's bill. Representative Murray, if you care to introduce your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. Thank you for having us here today to present a bill that's very important to the City of Albert Lea, Freeborn County, and the surrounding region. You have a handout in your packet that outlines this project. House File 1699 is a $7.5 million request that will be used for the restoration of Fountain Lake, which runs through the central part of Albert Lea. This will also be matched with $7.5 million from a local option sales tax for a total project of $15 million. This project has strong support of our community, and hopefully some of us will be here today. I think the weather might have held up some of them coming up from Albert Lea, but people from the county, Sportsman's Club, Chamber of Commerce, the Economic Development Arm, Convention and Visitors Bureau all strongly support this bill. Fountain Lake, as I mentioned, is located in the heart of the city of Albert Lea and is the main attraction to the city, to the Central Park, and to the Albert Lea's economy and quality of life. It's a very important issue that we take care of this lake, and we've done a lot of work to prepare us for this. Albert Lea is the gateway to Minnesota from the south, and we want to have a gateway that looks nice and has great water quality, a great-looking lake, and so this is a very important project. We're in the next phase now, and we're coming here with a dredging project. Our local watershed board has done a lot of work over the past several years to prepare upstream to make sure that we've done all the things that we need to be doing to prepare for this. We're not just jumping into the middle of this project and starting with the dredging project. We've worked with other lakes within the county. We have worked with filter strips and many things going north in our watershed so that we're going to be prepared to stop the sediment flow and make sure that when we do this, it'll be a good project. We've also done a cleanup on the dump that was located. Many of you may remember we had an Edgewater park on the north side of Fountain Lake that had a dump on it. That's been cleaned up over the last several years. So a lot of things have been done to work on this. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Brett Benke that's with the Shell Rock Watershed, and he's going to talk about some of the technical aspects of this project, and then we'd like to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Representative Murray. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Brett Benke, Shell Rock River Watershed District Administrator. Representative Murray covered most of what I was going to say today, but the Fountain Lake is a 550-acre lake, a tributary of approximately 63,000 acres, which is primarily agricultural land in Freeborn County. We've done quite a bit of work on the upstream and the upper watershed. We are experiencing high phosphorus levels. A lot of that we are contributing to runoff and stream bank erosion, and we're underway with a massive project to correct all those problems. However, the internal loading is still an issue for our lake, and the resolution to the last piece of this puzzle for this project is the dredging. As Representative Murray had said, it's a $15 million project. We are doing a $7.5 million local match. The community is in great support of this project. We've worked very hard to prove our accomplishments upstream so that this project is a lasting project. In conclusion, I'd just like to say that it's a multi-year effort. The Watershed District begun preliminary engineering for the project and is ready to move into final design, permitting, and land acquisition for the dredging.
Thank you. Any final remarks, Representative Murray?
I'd just like to say that restoring the water quality in Fountain Lake will enhance the tourism industry, will enhance jobs, will enhance the quality of life. We have a great medical facility in Albert Lea there, and we're bringing a lot of doctors into town, a lot of good jobs at the medical facility. And so we look at this as a very important project. And so we'd like your consideration. We believe this will really benefit southern Minnesota and benefit Albert Lea and look forward to your help with it. Thank you for having us here today, and thanks for the opportunity to talk to you about a very important project to Southern Minnesota.
Thank you for your presentation. We do have a couple of questions. We are going to try and move through the bills quickly today, members. We do have a quorum present, so I'll call this meeting of the Energy, Environment, Natural Resources Committee to order. And Representative Wojcinius has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two quick questions. One is, will the lake be swimmable when you're finished? And the second, for the citizens, not just the people who live around it, but for all the citizens of Albert Lake. And secondly, one of the things when we toured down there in the bonding committee that bothered me was that when MnDOT did a boat ramp in there, they didn't stop the drainage from the parking lot going into the lake. It, in fact, it's all just funneled right into the lake. Have you remedied that situation?
I guess I'll ask Rep. 2.
Mr. Chair, members, yes and yes to both those questions. I'll start with the MnDOT boat landing. We are working with them to come up with a remedy for that. We were disappointed at the time of the construction that we didn't see the plans prior to, and it did go in without some sort of water diversion of the parking lot. But yes, we are working towards that.
Thank you. Follow-up, President McGee.
My other question was, will it be swimmable for residents? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, it is swimmable now, but it's high. The algae bloom is immense, but yes, it'll be much more user-friendly, not only for the people that live on the lake, but for our community. It kind of uses it as our big swimming pool. So, yes, we're hoping it will be a clearer water.
Mr. Chair, I might just add that it is swimmable now in June. By July and into August, it becomes unswimmable because of all the contamination. So we think this will help quite a bit.
Thank you. Representative Hansel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Behnke, has the Watershed District or the county or city put in any cart barriers on lakes to kind of prevent rough fish from coming in? And also, what have been the efforts in terms of buffers or any upstream land protection?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Hansen, yes, we've worked on three cart barriers to control the rough fish. We were experiencing major loading from those tributary creeks from the lakes above. We've done lake reclamations on the upper lakes with fish reclamation and fish barriers. We also have 345 miles of public ditch in our county, and we have successfully put filters on all of that public ditch.
A follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Behnke, the county auditors made the decision that every public ditch in the county would be reviewed and buffers established on it. That was a local decision that was made. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, that is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That shows that it's not impossible to put buffers on ditches in counties, that it only takes the will of the local unit of government to try to establish land protection to reduce the sediment going in so we don't have to keep dredging out lakes and rivers.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Any final remarks, Representative Murray?
Just thank you again for having us here today, and the Watershed Board has done a fantastic job of getting us to this point, and so we look forward to your help with moving forward, and thank you and have a great day.
Thank you for bringing this forward. A reminder, members, that we're hearing these bills, and we will be assembling a list, and we will vote on the list later, so we will not be voting on each bill. Next up is House File 2015, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm representing the city of Redwood Falls today. They send their apologies. They were not able to make it up this morning due to the fine weather we're having this last couple days. The bill we have before us is 2015. It's a Lake Redwood Reclamation and Enhancement Project. The city of Redwood Falls is asking for a bond request of $7.825 million. Those dollars will be used to dredge Lake Redwood. Lake Redwood is a man-made lake for a hydroelectric project that has been in operation for a number of decades. It's a 66-acre lake on tributary to the Redwood River. It approximately produces 1 megawatt of power. This project, in combination with this dredge project, they are currently taking bids and accepting bids on upgrading the hydroelectric plant within the city. It's a city-owned generation plant. This project will allow them to double capacity. That is what their potential contribution of this project is. They are looking to spend about $4 million on the upgrading of the generation portion of this project, and coming before this committee looking for recommendation for the $7.8 million. This is a recreational portion as well. It's located directly in the city limits of Redwood Falls. Currently, just kind of moving to some of the questions that have been asked before, I do believe it has been, it's used as far as some recreation. There is kind of a park adjoining to it. The county has done a lot of work upstream with buffer strips and other things, not maybe directly related to this project, but just in general practice. There has been some jet skiing. This summer I did see jet skis, and it was quite to the surprise due to the limitation on depth of the water that there were people jet skiing in the lake. But it is a recreational center. It's a gem. With that, thank you.
Good. Thank you. Questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swazinski, is this area in a watershed district or
not?
Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, I do not believe that it is. I think Area 2 is in the district, so it does have some organizations that cover it. So,
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it doesn't have the, I'm just contrasting with the Freeborn County one here that you have in the presentation before you had local unit of government taxing their citizens to put in practices to reduce sedimentation. Are there any plans? I mean, you mentioned that there are some buffer strips going in, but those are, I'm assuming, voluntary catch-as-catch-can. Is there any coordinated effort to try to do upstream prevention to prevent the lake from filling in again?
Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, you could maybe potentially defer to Representative Torkelson if he's familiar with some of the work. He also represents Redwood County as well. So,
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. I am not familiar with the details of the watershed that surrounds this lake at this point in time, but would be happy to research that for you.
Representative Hansen.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Swazinski. Any closing remarks on your good project? Representative Wagenius. I didn't have you on the list. Sorry. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The utility is going to be obviously making money from this. What is their financial contribution to this?
Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, I believe it's their contribution to the project is going to be $3.5 to $4 million as far as the generation portion of the project. So they will be benefiting, yeah.
Representative Wagenius.
And then what's the contribution of the local units of government?
Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, it is my belief that the utility is owned by the city and the local unit of government.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there is no other, you know, contribution from, because you're asking then if they're for double the money that is being locally contributed, where in the last one I thought it was a one-to-one match. Mm-hmm. I may have missed that.
Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, I do believe that is the case. Yes.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further comments? Representative Swazinski, you want to wrap your project up?
Yes, I do appreciate your time, and I'd appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming forward. Next up, we have the zoo. Mr. Lemke, if you could come forward. Lemke. Representative Mack is, like many of us, got caught in the snow coming up. So welcome, and Ms. Alderman, thank you for being here. If you could identify yourself for the records and keep your remarks to a couple of minutes. We all know how great the zoo is. I think I'm going there Saturday, as a matter of fact, with the family. Welcome.
Sure. Terrific. I'm Lee Emke. I'm the executive director of the zoo.
Peggy Adelman, chief financial officer of the zoo.
And given the short time to present, I'll skip over some of the preliminaries to talk about, I think you all know about the zoo. We've, in the last several years, the public-private partnership that's been developed around the zoo has led to a lot of great success. We've averaged over 1.2 million visitors a year, which puts us among the top zoos in the country and is the best in the 34-year history of our zoo. Many of those guests, probably a quarter million or so, every year come from greater Minnesota. So I think, and we also have a Zoomobile program that serves the entire state over a two-year cycle. So the combination of visitors coming to us and our outreach program, again, demonstrates the statewide impact of the zoo. We're more than just an attraction, however. We're the largest environmental education center in the state with over 300,000 students and participants every year through our education programs. And I think all of the success, I think, is directly attributable to the significant reinvestment in the capital plant, the physical plant of the zoo, through this public-private partnership. We would like to continue the growth and the success, but one of the things we're really looking at is that as we're a lot of the physical plant's now approaching 40 years in age, we have a significant backlog of asset preservation needs and deferred maintenance that we hope to address in part through this bill. The request and the bill that's before you this year calls for $15 million in asset preservation and exhibit renewal, as well as $5 million to continue work on the Heart of the Zoo master plan for new improvements at the zoo. Our top priority is asset preservation. We've identified more than $30 million worth of needs on our campus, and the $20 million that's now in the bill will address only the most pressing of those needs. At the very top of that list are some very extensive remedial and preventative maintenance projects associated with our Discovery Bay Marine Animal Facility. The exhibition of marine animals is done only with the permission of the U.S. government through the U.S. Department of Agriculture, who licenses the zoo, as well as through the accreditation of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And we have some issues that potentially down the road could pose a threat both to our licensure and to accreditation. I would hold up, for your interest, Exhibit A. This is a small piece of the epoxy pool liner on our marine mammal pool in Discovery Bay. That's one of several that have come loose over the last several months. This was brought to me by my marine mammal staff just last week. This is the protective waterproofing that keeps the salt water that's in the pools out of the concrete and out of the steel superstructure that supports the tank and the building that it resides in. It's fairly typical for these facilities to have the replacement of the liner on a basically 20-year cycle. This is now a 15-year-old building, so we're kind of right in line with that typical cycle. But in addition to that, we're finding significant apparent deterioration in some of the structural components in the building not directly associated with the pool. The HVAC system, which is, of course, primarily composed of metal, is showing a lot of corrosion. So there's some very significant repair and maintenance work that really does need to be addressed fairly quickly in our Discovery Bay building. I think beyond that, with many of our asset preservation projects, we've looked not only to fix the things that needed to be fixed, but also improve the guest experience. And we have plans to do that, again, with the funding that we've requested. There's a long list in the packet that you've received of other asset preservation projects, and with 30 seconds left, I will not attempt to go through them all, but I'll please have a look, and I'm happy to answer any questions about that at the end. Finally, I just wanted to add, we do have the $5 million request to continue the Heart of the Zoo master plan. We opened phase one to great acclaim and great success this past summer. New penguin exhibit, new education center, new entry. We'd like to continue the work on that project, again, with the public-private funding model that we've been so successful with in the last several years. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions for Director Emke. Thank you, Director, and Ms. Adelman, thank you for being here. We appreciate you coming in the tough weather, and we look forward to funding this project. Next, we have Representative Dill, your House File 1810. Members, we are going to try and move rather quickly, and please raise your hand if I'm going too fast. We're hopeful to get quite a long ways here, and we are planning on coming back tomorrow. At this time, we're not planning on coming back tonight, but if we have to recess and come back tonight after session because we get totally bogged down, we will have that option through the day, but that's not our intention. But if we don't get as far as we would like to get, we may have to consider that. And then remember to keep your papers, members, for the bills that don't get heard today. You'll need them for tomorrow. So if you'll put them in your folder when we're done. Representative Dill, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move 1810 for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Go ahead.
This has to do with the community of Lutzen and providing a water supply for about 100 homes, several businesses, and the Superior National Golf Course, as well as the Lutzen Mountain Ski Hill. It consists of a pipeline 2 feet in 20 inches in diameter that will be buried, pump houses, a variety of many parts of infrastructure that will deliver water up to the top of the hill. Actually, it's two pipes, a smaller diameter pipe for drinking water and a larger pipe for the 20 inch pipe for irrigation. This has several environmental issues that it helps to resolve, or perceived environmental issues that it helps to resolve. One of them is the idea that that river, the Poplar River, is a trout stream, is designated as a trout stream. And although the snowmaking has continued there for numerous decades, it came to light last year in session, as many of you members know, that it needs to be looked at. We decided that this was the proper way to do it. The project does not require any permitting from the Great Lakes Compact or consultation with the Great Lakes Compact. There have been already installed, prior to even the idea that this project would be in place, runoff barriers, silt sedimentation traps, all kinds of things. And as the project goes forward in engineering, there'll be additional things to help with the turbidity of the water that's in the Poplar River and down at the mouth of the river at Lake Superior. This is a public-private partnership that's going to be a part of a water district that was created for four sections that surround the ski hill area. I just want to remind folks that the Cook County has 80% of their total economy is tourism, and although that is in the summer is the largest volume of business. The 50% or so of the business that is up there in the wintertime, it keeps the economy alive, keeps people in their homes, keeps people in their schools, and allows for the summertime to come along when they can actually make some money. I have not received any questions from any members of this committee, nor have I received any questions from any members of the legislature on this bill. It was so thoroughly vetted last year. What the reasons were for moving forward with this, that I will stand for questions. Also, I have with me Mr. Sable from Cook County, who ventured down here today, and he may be called upon to answer some questions as well, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Dill. I do want to ask, I don't see either Mr. Arnasty or Mr. Lincheski in the audience. I thought they may be here to speak to this bill. I don't see them. Questions. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one concern, not that you're going ahead with this project, but you've created a water district for the water coming in, but there's no watershed where there's no watershed district to manage all of the runoff. So you're managing parts of the runoff which are in the water district, that's the water coming in, the drinking water coming in, or the water coming in. But it seems to me that since we are going to watershed models all over this state, when we're doing a new project like this, there should be a watershed district to manage the runoff. I mean, we're being progressive in one sense and not in another.
Representative Deal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, first, members and Representative Bouguenius, there is an additional water proposed to be put onto the mountain. The water that is going to be put onto the mountain is already being put on the mountain. All we're doing is changing sources from the river to Lake Superior. As well, in the implementation of the engineering and then the construction, as I said earlier, there will be additional remediation as a part of the project to increase further the type of ideas that Representative Guinness is bringing forward in the absence of a watershed management. But as well, the Papa River Management Board and the Cook County and the PCA are all working on this, and so we're just we feel that we have the necessary components involved in the project without the watershed district at this time.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to comment on the watershed district situation, just because we're doing watershed planning based on watersheds doesn't mean that we're going to be establishing watershed districts in every watershed all across the state, and nor are they necessary. But planning certainly is, and I would guess that there already is a county water plan and may someday be a watershed-based plan. My question, though, this morning, Representative, is on the bottom end of this, how deep into the lake will you be drawing water?
Representative Deal?
I do not know that
Mr.
question.
Mr. Sanbo, do you happen to know?
Mr. Chair, my name is Mark Sanbo, and I'm the chairman of the EDA for Cook County.
Welcome.
I'm not exactly sure how far into the lake they will be going. I know that right outside of the area that they are putting the pipeline, it drops off drastically deep right in front of the Lutzen Resort area.
Mr. Chairman, we'll get back to you with that. We'll send it electronically to the members the answer.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Representative Torkelson.
Just a quick follow-up. Will the drinking water and other water be drawn separately from the lake?
Representative Dill or Mr. Sanbo.
Yes, there will be two pipes that carry water up, one for irrigation purposes for the Spear National Golf Course and one for the drinking water.
Thank you.
I've got Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, you mentioned about the two pipes and the capacity. I'm wondering about future development within the area and built-in capacity, so we don't have to come back and enlarge the pipe later on, or what are the plans for development in the future, or is this enough so we don't have to come back again and again on this?
Representative Dill.
Thank you. Well, the answer is yes to the question about being enough. Secondly, is in the four in the town in the sections that are identified in the water district, the western portion of that land is owned by the U.S. Forest Service, and so there's a very small amount, two and a half, maybe three sections cumulatively, or about 1,800 acres total, that could reasonably be developed because the federal government really isn't in the scheme of things selling off land for development. That land is generally developed already by the golf course, the ski hill, the condominiums that are in existence, the restaurants, and the other ancillary businesses that support that whole operation. So I'm not going to say that there will not be some development up there, as there always is when you have this kind of a situation, but any kind of a planned unit development or platting, or at this point there is none of that, and I really don't see the opportunity for that.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Dill. Any closing comments?
No. Just
thank you. We'll lay 18. Thank you, Representative Dill. We'll lay 1810 over for possible inclusion. Representative Westrom, House File 2138, Douglas County Project. Representative Westrom will come forward next. I believe it's Representative Loon with 2286. Representative Westrom, I know you can go fast, so you. We're not here to talk about snowmobiles and airplanes. It's a bonding project. Representative Westrom.
No seaplanes, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2138 deals with the drainage problem on Lake Oscar in Douglas County, which is geographically just west of Alexandria, about 8 or 10 miles, right along Highway 27 and State Highway 27 that goes through or on the north end of Lake Oscar. This has been a chronic problem for a long time, and if you draw, when I was a young guy, and we'd be out on the lake, or the lake was way down, and if you went by there in the last some years, there's a lot of houses and real estate that have lost their value because they literally are many feet underwater. There's big full-grown trees that are now beaver wood and prime picking for the beavers to take down because they're way underwater. And Highway 27 last summer was even in jeopardy of it going over the road, and they brought in several loads of big rock to help shore up the bank along Highway 27. I've had constituents call me, Senator Ingebrigtsen's had constituents, and we both made site visits and talked to the local township folks and the county engineer and residents in the area that have had this problem. So you've got a letter from the county engineer, Dave Robley, briefly explaining the project. There's been a study they commissioned with a price tag that came up with some options, and it ultimately they are viewing the option of putting in a much bigger tile in the current easement as the best long-term, basically maintenance-free source to get this water under control and not have real estate around the lake and the roads and other infrastructure in jeopardy every time we get an abundance of rain.
Thank you, Representative Weston. Questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could staff let us know if there's any precedent for state bonding dollars for a drainage outlet that we've ever bonded general fund, general obligation bonds for a local, extremely local project such as this?
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't know the answer, but I can get back to the committee on that.
Why don't you do that, Ms. Taylor? Thank you. Additional questions? Yep. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, I don't know if you were here for the earlier presentations, but I asked a couple questions of local units that were asking for dredging of lakes. Does this lake, or does it reside in a watershed district?
Representative Westrom.
Representative Hansen, I'm assuming you're over there.
Yeah.
hard to tell with these microphones. That's a good question. I don't think it does. In fact, I'm pretty sure it doesn't. It's the county commissioners that are ultimately responsible for this area, and I don't think there is a watershed district.
If it's different, Representative Westrom, why don't you let
let your staff know? But as I think about it, I don't think this is in a watershed district.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so Lake Oscar, and I'm not familiar with the location, Representative Westrom, but how large is the watershed for the lake where apparently you've got a high water level? How big is this watershed, and is it rural and metro?
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, It would be rural. There's at least two or three other lakes, and I actually had this question run through my mind as I was walking down here, and I don't have the answer. But Blackwell Lake, and I think it's Home City Lake, and there's one or two others at least that are part of this area that drain into Lake Oscar first, and so that exacerbates the problem because they're filling into Lake Oscar, and they're all at high levels right now, ruining real estate and causing damage around that whole area. And Lake Oscar, of course, it doesn't flow out, can't flow out fast enough, and that's the one that's really suffered the brunt of the problem because of the others draining in.
Representative Hansen.
Finally, Mr. Chair, I'd like to know what the DNR's position is on this
drainage proposal. Mr. Lockridge-Small, you want to come down? If you could identify yourself for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Lockridge-Small, Director of Capital Investment for DNR. And to answer the earlier question, we have funded lake outlets in the past with bond dollars, because they are the remedy to solve the flooding problem around lakes, and that's what this project would do.
Mr. Lockridge-Small, did we ever do the one that was in former Representative Solberg's district, probably Mac Alpatrick's now, where we had to put a pump to save the city of Bow Bay, if I remember right? Did we ever finally get that done, or are we still fighting over that?
Mr. Chairman, there was money appropriated. The first phase of that project is done, and the final engineering is being done for the permanent gravity outlet, which should construction would start this fall.
Thank you. Do you have an answer for Representative Hansen's question? Where is this on your list of priorities?
Well, this is a high priority project, although we have identified over $100 million of demand for potential flood hazard mitigation projects. So depending on what the appropriated amount is, how much money could and this is a relatively small project. As some of the projects we see for flood hazard mitigation end up being $10, $20 million. So those are very hard to fund with a relatively small bill. So on a smaller project, we typically have been able to fund these.
Thank you, Mr. Lockridge-Small. Representative Hansen, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Lockridge-Small, on this bill, I don't see the word flood or flood hazard mitigation, or that it's just a grant to Douglas County. So is the DNR viewing this as something that could be through their flood hazard mitigation system, or is this a special outside the box proposal?
Mr. Lockridge-Small.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I understood the project to be a $700,000 project, of which they needed a flood hazard mitigation grant for 50% of that.
Would that be true, Representative Westrum?
Mr. Chair, the plan that they have picked is actually under about $500,000 or around $400,000, as I recall. And so this would be greater than the 50% dollars that they'd be receiving with the $300,000. So it's a hybrid between the two is what it amounts
to. So, Representative Westrum, the good conservatives that you represent knocked the project down in total cost by being smart with the total.
Well, they're picking kind of the middle grade. The cheapest way to go short-term, Mr. Chair, would be to dredge a ditch and but there's problems with getting through and under some roads. They'd have to, there's some elevation problems, and then to get under the roads, and they'd have to pick up some more easements, if I understood it correctly. But long term, they're afraid that you've got ditch cleaning projects and problems that you'd have a fight 10 years down the road again. And so the middle of the road kind of idea is to just get a big enough outlet in that should have been probably installed the first time they ever did this area. But
thank you.
Hindsight's 2020.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if conservative is the right word, because if it was flood hazard mitigation, it'd be 50-50. This looks to be 30-1. So I think that's creative funding, where the state would pick up 30-1 versus 50-50 if it was a flood hazard mitigation grant. So I think if it's a flood hazard mitigation grant, it should be under the same standards as everybody else we're going to hear today.
Thank you for those comments. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I drive by Oscar Lake a lot, and it's a large lake, and I can't figure out where you're draining this lake to.
Representative Westrum.
Representative Wagenius, when you drive by it to your farm, the Lake Oscar goes under Highway 27 to North Lake Oscar, which is just on the north side of Lake Highway 27, or your right when you're driving out there. There is a tile outlet there that's only, I think it's 12 inches. and then that drains further to the north and west, and there's a ditch several miles up, or a ditch several miles up. It meanders up through by Andy's Tower Hills, if you know where that is, and then there's an outlet somewhere. The engineer couldn't make it down today. I wish he was. He'd give you a better answer, but that's the general direction it goes.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, I am familiar with Andy's Tower Hill.
Elaborate to us, Representative Wagenius, what are you and Representative Westrom talking about?
Actually, Senator Ingebrigtsen and I both had our grandchildren at Andy's Tower Hill for summer camp 2 summers ago. I don't see where this water is going without flooding out other residents. That's what I'm concerned about. There's a huge amount of water. Where's it going to go? That's one question. My second question is, are there any invasive species in Oscar Lake?
Mr. Lackershmo, do you know the first question as far as the outlet and where it's headed with the larger pipe? Or Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chairman, I do not.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, that's why it would be a controlled structure. They would not flood downstream at the expense of putting this in. They would have a control system that, if they have to keep it back, hold it back for a couple of days or a week, to or regulate how much goes downstream. There is one farm several miles down that has showed up at the meeting this fall we had, when the report came back to the commissioners and the township officers. They raised the concern. I have talked to the engineer. I know the family, and I have explicitly been clear that we need to make sure that there is a resolution for them. The resolution, they tell me, primarily is making sure the ditch is clean beyond their property, but there is an outlet under their driveway and under a road there that can't take more than so much, and so if that's flooding, they have committed that they would not let more through than what that area could take, and so we're still working out to make sure everybody's on board, but that's the one problem area that I'm aware of.
Follow up, Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my recollection that this is a landlocked lake and it doesn't drain to any river, so we have to worry about what neighbors were flooding with all this water. That's one thing. And so I am very uncomfortable with this project if we don't know where the water's going. The second thing is, it's my understanding that there's an invasive species of some type in Oscar Lake, and I think we ought to be concerned about that. What invasive species would that be, Mr. Lackershmo?
Representative Westrom, you were going to get back to us on the watershed status, so if you could also get back to us electronically on where this outlet actually would go, and if it is completely landlocked, or at some point is it designed to overflow into another water body?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, I know you got to move. Invasive species, I will also check. I have not heard that there's invasive species in there, but Representative Wagenius, I will double check on that with the locals. Secondly, there is a tile already that's in this. You're right, it's landlocked. That's the problem that's going on with all these lakes draining into Lake Oscar. The tile, we're simply just allowing greater flow capacity when there's not excess water downstream, but that's why we got the control structure, so they don't flood downstream until downstream can take it.
Thank you. I have no other questions. Thank you, Representative Westrom and Mr. Lackershmo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Next, I have Representative Loon, House File 2286. And I believe, Representative Loon, you have a couple testifiers with, if they both could come forward, Ms. Nauman and Mr. Sam. And keep your total testimony to a couple of minutes. That'll be great. We will cut you off if you go too long. Welcome, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will try to be brief so that most of your time would be for any questions that the committee members might have. I am presenting House File 2886, which requests $8 million in bonding authority, which would go to the Metropolitan Council to be used as grants for helping cities within the metro area that have been identified as having a problem with their inflow and infiltration from their sewer systems into the regional wastewater treatment facility. Inflow and infiltration, or I&I, are the terms used when clean water is getting into the regional sewers treatment system, and usually it's through aging or broken sewer infrastructure in those local communities. So this clean water ends up getting into the regional wastewater system and is unnecessarily being treated, and that uses up the capacity of that regional wastewater treatment system that is designed to meet the region's needs, and so that is creating a problem. Right now there's 47 cities that have been identified that need to repair their sewer infrastructure system, or they're going to be really fined or surcharged by the Met Council. These repairs are often complex and expensive, and most of the cost is borne by the local taxpayers, and again, even under this proposal, cities could be eligible for a grant of up to 50% of the project to help them, again, upgrade their sewer systems to prevent this inflow and infiltration system. It's a public health issue. It's an environmental issue. We want to make sure that a regional wastewater treatment system can operate effectively, and that we are not stressing that capacity with water that doesn't need to be going through the treatment system. And to further provide information for the committee, I have Patricia Nauman, who is Executive Director of Metro Cities, and also Matt Somm, and he is the Public Works Director for West St. Paul, which is one of the communities that has been identified as needing to upgrade their sewer system.
Thank you. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Patricia Nauman. I am the Executive Director of Metro Cities, and for those of you not familiar with our organization, we're a member-based organization that represents cities in the 7-county metropolitan area at both the Legislature and Metropolitan Council. With me today is Public Works Director Matt Somm from the City of West St. Paul, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk briefly with you about our capital request for inflow and infiltration mitigation. What is inflow and infiltration? In the metro area, more than 100 communities own and operate local sewer systems that connect up to the region's wastewater pipes. The Met Council is responsible for providing the wastewater treatment, which is planned to accommodate the region's growth and population. A primary challenge for the regional system is the issue of significant inflow and infiltration of which is essentially clear water from municipal systems that ends up flowing into the regional wastewater pipes, and as a result ends up being treated unnecessarily by the regional wastewater treatment plants. Inflow and infiltration occur when groundwater or rainwater, both which are essentially clean water, enter the sanitary sewer system through defects in local, public, and private infrastructure. Sources of infiltration or groundwater are typically occurring through cracks in pipes, leaky joints, and deteriorating manholes. And sources of inflow are typically the direct connections to the sanitary sewer system, such as cross connections, foundation drains, and sump pumps. And inflow typically occurs in direct proportion to rainfall. So when you have peak rainfalls, this is when you usually find out that the sewer infrastructure is compromised. In the metropolitan area, 47 cities have been identified as experiencing excess inflow and infiltration, which is the result, again, from the defects in public sewer infrastructure. This is a major concern for the region because this water, again, ends up being treated by the waste regional treatment plants, which were not built to accommodate this kind of issue. They were built to accommodate the region's population growth for the future. So it ends up taking capacity in the system. Correcting I&I is much more cost-effective to do at the local level, which is why we're here today, is to ask for what we hope is a relatively small amount of bonding money. It's far more costly to address this at the region. The Metropolitan Council has estimated that if we don't fix this problem at the local level, the region is looking at potentially another $1 billion in additional capacity, which all cities in the region would bear. I'm going to turn it over in the interest of time to
Mr. Somm, if you want to give us a couple short comments, that'd be fine. Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt Somm, Public Works Director for the City of West St. Paul. As these nice ladies have already said, our city is one that's included in the Met Council's surcharge program to combat and mitigate I&I. Just to give you some statistics, our original five-year surcharge amount to be paid from 07 to 2011 was nearly $1 million, $972,000 to be exact. We've done a lot of work since then. However, we still have a surcharge of a little over a third of a million to be paid out in either mitigation or a bill to the Met Council. Some of the things that we've been doing to combat INI at our city level. On the public side, we've been televising our mains, smoke testing, trying to find cracks. We've then been repairing those sewer mains and leaking manholes. We also have a private service inspection program. Every house and building that's connected to the sewer system potentially can be leaking, so we also inspect those. In all, over the last 5 years, we've spent over $2.3 million toward fighting this. We're committed to continuing it, and we really think this bonding, potential bonding money would help out a lot. So
thank you.
I'd be happy to take the question.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Mr. Sam, I guess, would probably be the correct destination for this question. Who owns the line that runs from the house to the sewer line that's in the street?
Mr. Sam.
Thank you. Mr. Torkelson, it would be the private property owner.
Representative Torkelson.
And is there any program in place to make sure that those lines are inspected on any regular basis or updated when houses change hands or anything like that?
Is it, Mr. Sam, is it even physically possible to inspect those smaller lines?
Mr. Chair, it is. In our city, we do have an inspection program. Basically, a camera is ran down the pipe from the home or business out to where it connects with our sewer main. And then we're able to determine if there's issues.
Representative Clark. And is it your intention that these funds be used on those private lines?
Mr. Sam.
No, sir, it is
Thank
not.
You. What Representative Torkelson, follow up.
I'm done.
Representative Hansen, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, the private landowners in West St. Paul, some of them have spent between $6,000 and $8,000 of their own money to upgrade that. They have city inspectors come into their house and check their sewers. You know, I think that, let's just assume if that same precedent applied in rural Minnesota, where you have a government inspector come into the house and check the entire sewer system and then bill them $6,000 to $8,000 for upgrading the system. What these folks are proposing is the public infrastructure repair, not the private.
Well, this is a good idea. We like your bill, Representative Loon, but to Representative Hansen's point, many of us that have septic systems in rural Minnesota have a person visit us and tell us whether or not that septic system's up to standard. They come, I believe, in my case, every year or two. Representative Torkelson might know, but if your septic system's not up to standard, I wish it was only $6,000 or $8,000, and they don't let you do anything till you replace the entire septic system. Was my experience, and that's to better the water quality of our lakes. A good idea, no different than at my home in Hastings. When the line leaks, I get to dig it up and pay. Your right, Representative Hansen, $6,000 to $8,000, especially if it's this time of year and you're working with 3 feet of frost. Representative Torkelson, to this point.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen. I certainly, if you would be willing to come out and rebuild my septic system for $8,000, you can come out any time. This is a problem throughout the state in all jurisdictions, not just rural and not just city. And I'm just trying to point out that we all have ownership of this and need to take responsibility. I'm glad that a community is doing this inspection, but I believe there are many communities where that's not occurring.
Representative Hansen, at this point.
One final point. Many of these folks are 60 to 80 or 90 years old. They are not able to recover from the land that they own. It's not a business. It's a private home. They aren't raising a crop that they can receive the revenue from. So they're on fixed income. It's a little different than a business.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Drazkowski, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out, Mr. Chair, your observation was correct. This is to help impact and improve water quality, very consistent with our constitutional amendment for the Legacy Program.
Glad you're supportive of that effort, Representative Drazkowski. Ms. Nauman, to this point, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To answer a couple of questions that have been raised, first of all, with bonding money, we cannot use this money to do the private infrastructure pieces. However, many cities, including the city of West St. Paul, are providing assistance to the private side. This is both a private issue and a public issue. And many cities, including the city of West St. Paul, are providing funds to homeowners to help them with those repairs. Further, by having money allocated for the public side, it actually frees up cities to do a little bit more to assist homeowners with the private side. I also wanted to point out that one difference between the metropolitan area and rural Minnesota with regard to this issue is that cities in the seven-county area are compelled to make these repairs or they risk being fined by the Metropolitan Council. The council has a program in place that essentially identifies the cities that are contributing inflow and infiltration into the regional system, and if they don't make the repairs, they're surcharged by the council. So there is a financial pressure there for communities in the seven-county area.
Representative Beard.
Ms. Nauman, just segued right into the question I had. The surcharge for cities that are offending, does that go into a fund that helps them pay for fixing their I&I problems, or what happens to that surcharge money?
Ms. Nauman.
At council?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, to this date, the Met Council has had a program in place for 5 years. No city has actually ever been surcharged because all cities that have been identified have been working to undertake repairs, which is what the council really wants to see happen. The point of the surcharge, and a few years ago they had talked about doing a demand charge if I&I is not corrected at the local level, with the thought being that if cities are not going to be working to correct these issues at the local level, that the Met Council would have to have the money in order to build the additional capacity needed. So I presume that's what they would use that money for, although we haven't had to do that because cities have been working to make these repairs.
Representative Beard.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Loon. We appreciate the bill coming forward. Next, we have Representative Slawick, the Fish Lake Natural Greenway. And members, you have a number of handouts on this project. And I hope that you've had a chance to look at it. Representative Slawick, if you want to divide your time up to let some of the testifiers speak, please do that. But we are going to keep it real, real short. We've got a lot of great handouts about this project. So go ahead. Welcome, Representative Slawick.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing House File 596 on Fish Creek. Fish Creek is the acquisition of 70 acres, members, that is in Maplewood. So if you know where 3M is, it's about 3 miles south of there. We're putting the funding together for this, and the bonding bill and funding from this committee could come in and finish it off. We have a grant from 3M for $100,000. Ramsey County has given money, and the Bailey Nurseries family is also involved. I just want to point out in our audience, we have the big fish over here. You want to see our volunteers from Maplewood that have been around from Fish Creek, Carolyn Peterson and Char Waslick, Ron Cockrell, Joe Bailey, Ginny Yingling, and Representative Lilly, of course, here supporting the cause, so we very much appreciate that. With that, I will go to the testifiers next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Virginia Gaynor. I work with the City of Maplewood. This site is surrounded on three sides by Ramsey County open space. It has open rolling hills with scattered woodlands. It's impressive because it's on the top of the eastern bluff of the Mississippi River, right adjacent to St. Paul. And from the bluff top, there are long vistas over the Mississippi River Valley to the western horizon. There's an opportunity and a desire to enhance and restore parts of the site to oak savanna and oak woodland. The call to preserve this site began over 20 years ago by some of the residents that are here today. 2 years ago, our community convened a group of partners to develop a vision for what we call the Fish Creek Natural Area Greenway. And this parcel is a key part of the greenway. The greenway is a larger habitat corridor that goes from Point Douglas Road in St. Paul through Maplewood to Woodbury. Our vision for the greenway is to protect and connect habitat parcels, and this is a key parcel to acquire in that vision. One of the features of the vision is also the Fish Creek Hiking Trail. That on your map is the dotted line on your trail. It would connect to the Mississippi River Trail at Point Douglas Road in St. Paul, go along the creek through St. Paul and Maplewood to Carver Lake and Woodbury. The site is important regionally for its habitat connections and its trail connections. It is part of the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area, and we're excited about St. Paul's new plan for the Great River Passage that proposes a bluffland connection between this Fish Creek Greenway area northward to Battle Creek Regional Park, which would include habitat connection as well as trail connection.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you. I'm going to focus on another story.
You could identify yourself for the record.
Dwayne Nico, City of Maplewood. I'm the Park and Rec Director for the City of Maplewood.
Thank you. If you keep your comments short, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair. Another equally compelling storyline is the number of rich partners that we have for this project, including both private and public. Representative Slavik did indicate that as well. And there's a handout that was included with the information that was submitted on behalf of this project that details thus far, we've secured funding in essence of a little over $1.5 million, which represents about 75% of the funding needed to make this project successful. So we're real happy about that. We've got a number of partners, including Ramsey County, the Washington Metro Watershed District as well, 3M. Staff is currently working with 3M to try to secure some additional funding in this go-around as well. And we've got a number of other partners that staff is working very closely with to see this project through. So with that, Chair and committee members, I'll throw that back for any questions that you may have of us, including Representative Slavik.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Any questions on the project? Thank you, Representative Slavik. We appreciate y'all coming forward and keeping your comments short. Thanks a lot. Representative Fabian, why don't you go to you, I believe. We're going to skip down members. If you represent Fabian, you've got some out-of-town folks here that we'd rather not have to make come back again. Representative Fabian, it's House File 2196.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 2196 for possible inclusion. Have a chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for moving us up on the agenda. A gentleman here from Oslo, Minnesota. If you've ever seen the pictures during the floods of the Red River, Oslo is literally an island. It's a dot on the map protected by a dike, and there's water for several miles on either side of it. Just a couple of things with regards to this bill. This bill continues the partnership between North Dakota and Minnesota as part of our comprehensive long-term plan to reduce the damage that's created by flooding, the frequent flooding in the Red River Valley. These projects are shovel-ready. We're also included in here retention areas that is a part of the goal of reaching our 20% reduction in peak flow during flood times. There's lots of protection here for rural roads and bridges and culverts. The other thing that's in these retention areas is that there's a tremendous amount of enhancement for both environmental and recreational opportunities. And, of course, these funds also are leveraged against federal funds, so that it's important to move these forward. I'd like to just defer, if you would, Mr. Chair, just because they made such a long trip in the weather. Yeah. Go ahead.
If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Good morning. I am Scott Kosmatka, Mayor of Oslo, Minnesota. We are here in front of you today to ask that Oslo be designated $6.2 million for a levee project that's currently being handled right now. This project is very necessary right now. It's been mandated by FEMA that our levees be recertified. If our levees are decertified, it'll be detrimental to our town. We will all be required to carry flood insurance. There will be no growth in our town, no new homes, no new businesses. So it's detrimental that we do continue with this project and have it completed by the end of this season, which would be October.
Hey, Mayor, excuse me, but if I could ask you to spell your last name, we missed it.
Kosmatka. Kosmatka.
Thank you. Continue, Mayor. If you could keep it short and let us know what else you wanted to tell us.
Sure. We just want to let you know how detrimental it is. We finish our levee project here. Also, another little point I want to touch on would be the Highway 1 project we are looking at. During the high flood waters, our Highway 1 has about 3 feet of water on it. And we are not able to leave town. So we're looking at that project also to be looked at. with raising the road or whatnot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you have another testifier to represent Fabian, or that's it?
Mr. Harnack is here. He would be the only one if there were specific questions.
If there's
about
specific questions.
Thank
projects, you.
I'm not sure.
Questions for on the project. Representative Wagenius.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not on the project so much, but I think it would be helpful.
Mr. Lacosmo, excuse me. I'm sorry, Representative Wagenius. Pardon the interruption, but Mr. Lacosmo is here too. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think it would be helpful for the committee to know. I mean, we're putting $17 million. We've put in over $300 million in flood mitigation. What is the total dollar amount that we're going to have to fund over time?
Mr. Lacoschmal, if you could come down, just pull up another chair there, whatever works. Was that specific to the Red River Valley you were asking, Representative Wagenius, totally across the state?
Across the state. I think we keep adding money to flood mitigation, but I don't have a sense of what's the total dollar we will need to eventually appropriate to solve these problems.
Well, unfortunately, Mr. Lacoschmal, you've been here long enough to be able to answer that question. So if you could give us a snapshot of flood mitigation funding across the state of Minnesota. The 30-second version. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Lacoschmal with DNR. What we identified as unmet needs right now is about a little over $100 million. And with the previous funding from the last couple of years, we've actually completed 19 projects or significant portions of other projects. So we are, I know there's a concern that this is a never-ending funding issue, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. We've made significant progress in the last few years. And like I said, there's $100 million or so of unmet need that we're aware of at this time.
Follow-up, Representative Wagenius, or you got it?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This would be good for this committee. I'm not here because we don't have time now. I understand that. But the things that may make this worse in the future that raise this $100 million, what are the potential? I mean, I looked at this thing on Oscar Lake, and I thought, oh, my gosh, somebody else is going to be flooded, and then we'll have to go in and mitigate that. So what are the, you know, let's talk about that potential at some time, not now.
Good point, Representative Wagenius. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lacosmo, on these projects, has there been any drainage improvement in this area? Have there been any new ditches or cleanouts or redetermination of benefits?
Either Mr. Lacoschmal or Mr. Harnack. Mr. Lacoschmal.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, there have been some drainage improvements. I'm not aware of any redetermination of benefits. Mostly what we're looking at for projects here are municipal protection projects, although there are watershed district empowerment projects included also.
Mr. Harnack, comment, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Ron Harnack. I'm project coordinator for the Red River Watershed Management Board. And there have been some redetermination of benefits done in the valley. Most of those are being looked at on a watershed or sub-watershed scale and looking at those that are contributing to the system rather than just those that are benefiting from the system.
Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harnack, my concern is we do the redeterminations or we do the improvements and we increase the speed and the velocity or the bounce, and then the public has to pay for the levies to account for the bounce.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Harnack,
and Representative Hansen, we do not have a single watershed in our area that is occurring in, because the watershed districts also regulate that improvement or are managing it themselves and make sure that we have proper storage within the system so we do not pass that impact downstream.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lacosmo, is that the case in all the flood damage
Mr. Lacosmo.
Mitigation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, generally I think watershed districts are looking at increasing storage and managing the flow. I mean, a lot of these other projects are just looking at the municipal protection, so they don't have any authority to look at the entire watershed.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the valley, there's quite a few watershed districts and a history of managing water, but
some of the other projects we'll hear from or have heard from today, there may not be watershed management to look at those flows.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, in the Red River Valley, there is only one watershed, major watershed, that is not a watershed district, and that is the Otter Tail River Watershed District.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Fabian. Next, we're going to hear from, why don't we go, Representative Eakin, I think you got in here ahead of Marquardt, so we'll take you in order of when you arrive, and then we'll do Representative Marquardt. We'll try and be respectful of any other members that show up that aren't on the committee. We'll move them. Welcome to the committee, Representative Eakin. I don't think you've been here yet this year, so welcome.
Thank you, Representative Chair McNamara. And yes, I do have a House File 2215. I don't know if somebody needs to move that then.
No, we're just doing it for all possible. And I was late myself, but Representative Torkelson, did you let them know that we're going to use the letter method? We're going to save a little money and not put it in the bill form. We're going to use the letter form that will, I believe, be before us. Ms. Sipko, is that to be before us not tomorrow, but will the actual letter form be next week? Representative Eakin, if you want to present your bill, and Mr. Lacushmo, you might as well stay available.
Sure. And thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this bill appropriates $13 million for flood mitigation in several different projects, Bear Park Retention, Climax, and Ring Dikes for Climax, Felton, Nielsville, Shelley, also the Upper Becker Retention. And these projects, we made significant progress in the Red River Valley on using these bonding funds for flood mitigation projects, and there's been a lot of investment made already, but we need to complete the projects that have been begun, and many are ready to move to the next stage, a final design here, and actual construction. It's been saving a lot of money to invest in these projects. For every dollar that's spent on flood damage mitigation, we save about $4 in cleanup and repairs afterwards and dealing with them after the fact. So prevention is much more cost-effective. So, again, these dollars are very, very beneficial for our state and saving money in the long run. And there is a long-term plan that is being developed, and that long-term plan includes retention that's going to result in 20% reduction in during the peak flood stages, which will go a long ways again towards saving money for us in the long run and protecting us from these floods. The fact that this year we're not facing a flood situation the way it appears, because it's been a very dry winter and it was a dry fall as well, actually that's beneficial for these dollars to be spent on projects, because these projects can get moving sooner now, and more can be accomplished during this year. So again, a very, very effective time to be putting these bonding dollars into these projects. There are numerous benefits to be had that go beyond just the flood protection. I think it's important to note, especially in the area of the retention projects, that also has numerous environmental benefits as well, environmental enhancement, dealing with water quality or fish and wildlife habitat, creating more fish and wildlife habitat, also in recreational opportunities that can be created through these retention projects. So, and one last thing, this money can also leverage federal funds, so giving those dollars a bigger bang as a result of that. So for all these reasons, I would like to see these bonding projects supported and passed through the legislature. Again, emphasizing the point that this will save us money in the long run. And do have Mr. Harnack here, who can answer questions to the specific details of the plans.
Thank you, Representative Eakin, and good job in summing it up and moving quickly. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harnack, with the exception of Section C here, of these projects will be 50-50. These projects will be 50-50.
Mr. Harnack.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, some of them will be 75-25 based on the environmental enhancements that are built into the project under our Red River Mediation Agreement.
Representative Hansen. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Eakin. Next, we'll hear from Representative Marquardt and then Representative Poppy after that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2403 are two more very important pieces to the overall plan in the Red River Valley. As Representative Eakin had said, to reduce the peak flows by about 20% during flood events through flood water control structures. These are two more of those. One is in Redpath Township in Traverse County, and the other would be a completion of the North Ottawa Impoundment Project in Grant County, right by Traverse County. And the total value is about $9.17 million. And as Representative Eakin has said, the investments that the state has put into flood mitigation all those efforts since 1997 has paid itself over and over again. In 1997, the total FEMA and state costs after that was about $236 million. In 2009, where we had a record high in the Red River Valley that hit the area, that damage amount was down to $48 million. And in 2011, where we had the fourth highest, it was down to $20 million. So these improvements that are being made up and down the Red River Valley have just been tremendous as far as cost savings, and I just really want to thank all the committees and the state for all the efforts.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harnack, these names look familiar. I'm just wondering, have you approached the Heritage Council for the habitat portion of any of these, and what's your success rate been there?
Mr. Harnack.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, we have approached the Lessard Sams Council on the North Ottawa project to complete the natural resource enhancement components of it, and because the land is already designated as a state wildlife refuge and does not have public access, it was not approved. It basically didn't even make it to first base.
Representative Hale.
On the other one, we are applying for the stream restoration component of the Redpath project this fall. We have been successful on the Grand Marais, which you may recall did receive some funding from Lessard Sams and Clean Water for the improvements there.
Mr. Harnack, is that through the Conservation Partner, the CPL grants, or was that a direct? Is it a project bigger than $400,000?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, that one was for bigger than $400,000 for the stream restoration. And then through Bowser, we got some of the clean water funds to help deal with the clean water components of that project as well.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm thinking back to the constitutional language, and I think for restoration and enhancement, it doesn't require access. If you acquire land, then you have access as provided by law, but not in the Constitution. So I'd like, and we don't have to do this right now, Mr. Chair, but the statement that enhancing or restoring land for habitat has to require access, I don't think is a constitutional requirement. It appears to be subjective.
That's a good point, Representative Hansen. I think Mr. Harnack said that Lessard Sams didn't get it past, I think he used the phrase first base, because it didn't include public access. But as Representative Hansen noted, it is definitely not a requirement for enhancement protection project. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick, I heard the word impoundment in there, and this involves storing water upstream in the watershed, and that's been a big part of the mitigation in the Red River. That I just want to make sure I understand that.
Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell, that is correct. It's impoundment water storage along the Boise Sioux watershed, which is supposed to probably keep the levels at peak time in Breckenridge down up to 2 feet when both projects are completed, which is significant.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Appreciate you coming forward. Additional questions? No. Representative Poppy. That's it. You're done, Representative Marquardt. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're in good shape. You did well. Thank you, Mr. Hardack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
If you could talk about your bill.
Thank you. This is House File 458, and we are talking about flooding. We're talking about flooding in southern Minnesota as opposed to northwestern Minnesota. But I'm here on behalf of the city of Austin. This is a situation we've had repetitive flood events over the course of many years, starting in 1978, 1983, 2000, 2004, 2008, 2010, and likely to happen in the future again. In response to the continued flooding and the severity of the flooding, the city of Austin passed a local option sales tax for flood mitigation purposes, and that was on behalf of the citizens voted in support of that, and thank you to the legislature for allowing us to be able to do that. As part of the local option sales tax, a comprehensive plan was adopted that includes a mitigation project on Turtle Creek. The city of Austin has completed work on all of the projects above Turtle Creek, on the plan, and that's on the second page of your attachment. The city of Austin has completed the feasibility report for that project. So the Turtle Creek project, which is what we are seeking the dollars for, would include property acquisition, structural improvements, and infrastructure protection, and that protection includes against sewer backups. The city of Austin is unique that we have the local option sales tax commitment so that we're allowed or able to, we are able to provide the $3 million matching funds for this project through the local option sales tax. So I appreciate your support, and I will try to answer any questions.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Poppe, the local citizens have put forward money here, and you are putting up 50%?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, follow up.
You know, I think as we look at all these proposals, we see inconsistency in terms of how folks are responding to floods. You have a city like Austin that has taken a comprehensive approach, doing a plan, putting up, taxing themselves. You've got watershed districts. Representative Poppe, you have watershed districts there?
Turtle Creek is a watershed district, yes.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So they have the ability to levy, to deal with upstream mitigation. Mm-hmm. So you have a variety of an approach to flooding. And then others, you may be having a 30-to-1 match, public to private, or 75-25. So I think it's just interesting that we have local communities that step up to the plate and others that come here and want the plate. And I appreciate that Austin has taken a comprehensive approach.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I must correct the math is 3-to-1, not 30-to-1, has been repeated on a few occasions. 300,000 or 400,000 leaves 100,000, which is 3-to-1.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, the local output was 10,000, not 100,000.
I think he was referring to a different project, not this one. Representative Poppe, anything additional to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this project. We are concerned about public safety as well with regards to flood mitigation, and we appreciate the support that we've gotten in the past. We would definitely appreciate the support in the future. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming forward. Representative Anderson, you've got one on here, and then Representative Dill, we'll go to you if Representative Lanning hasn't showed up by the time, but our hope would be to get Representative Lanning's bills done next after Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This request comes from the city of Glenwood, which is about 150 miles northwest of here. If any of you have ever visited Glenwood coming in from the east or the north, you come over a beautiful ridge and look down at the lake and the city, and it's really a beautiful sight. The Lake Minnewaska there is, I think, the 12th largest lake in the state. And the reason for this request is that whenever we have a heavy rain event, which seems to be coming more often of late, all that drainage comes down those hills quickly, and it has flooded the fairgrounds, flooded the state highway going through Glenwood, and then it settles across the highway between the highway and the lake in a residential area. And last summer, that water, the lake was so high that the water stayed there all summer long, and it's been a chronic flooding area for years and years and years. So the city would like to, if possible, buy up those four or five properties in the area and turn that into kind of a stormwater retention area, get those homes out of there, and put in an area that the water could stay there and filter out, and really clean up an area that is a problem area in the city of Glenwood. And I'll get the question about the local match thing. I've not done this flood work before, and when the bill was drawn up, they asked if I wanted that or not, and the city didn't have the money laying around for one-to-one match. But this is not the entire cost of the project. We had talked to the DNR last summer and possibly to do some in-kind work, engineering, planning to be a local match. And so that's the reason that that match part is not part of this bill, but it could be corrected if that's a problem. So thank you, and I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Thank you. Representative Anderson, is this the homes right by the Dairy Queen there in that yeah. whole area? Thank
yes, you. That Appreciate whole area gets really wet. And the lake was so high last summer, it actually backed up through a stormwater pipe, and it just was wet and bad water all summer long.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Dill, you want to do your bill next? I believe it's House File 1853.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move on to 1853 for possible inclusion.
Representative Dill.
Okay. If you look, Mr. Chair, back on line 2.12, you'll see some stricken language. The reason for the stricken language is the trailhead was the trail that this bill originally considered was from the Bearhead State Park, but now with the development, this is a long trail and it's being put together over quite a period of time. And the with the development of the Vermilion State Park, it's now been identified that we could better match up the resources by hooking into Vermilion State Park and the trails that they're having and moving on towards Ely, which is the final destination. So what that stricken language does is it changes the Bearhead State Park language to then be within Vermilion State Park, the connection. That's fairly simple because, again, it's just a segment. The second part of the bill on 2.17 changes the local match from $950,000 to $550,000. And frankly, members, that is what the local community has been able to come up with from the public and private sector to make this match. Those are the two components to the bill.
Thank you, Representative Dill. I don't see any questions. Thank you, Representative Dill. I was just trying to pay attention here. Some conversations going on, but not towards you. Representative Lanning, thank you for coming away from your committee. Representative Lanning, you've got two bills. You can take them in the order you want. We're laying all these over for possible inclusion in a letter to Chairman House. So, Representative Lanning, if you could just tell us which one you're going to speak to first. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Excuse my voice. A little fogged over here today, but I'm feeling better than I did yesterday. The first bill was a bill that we introduced last year, House Bill 1051, and I have some good news for you that we've cut that about in half through the request. One of the provisions in that bill, the Georgetown levy, was approved in a bonding bill last year, and so that's been taken out, and then the amount of money required to finish up the Oakport flood mitigation project has now been reduced to $6 million. And so we're requesting $6 million to finish up that project and another $620,000 to meet the match that's required to do the Manston Slough retention project. Members, we want to thank all of you for your consideration in the past on the Oakport flood mitigation. There have been several phases of that over many years, and this is the final request. This will complete the project that has been very instrumental in protecting this part of our community. Need to remind you that most of Oakport Township will officially be annexed into the city of Moorhead in a couple of years. We went through an orderly annexation process, and so this work will fit in and tie in with the flood mitigation efforts that have been undertaken in the city of Moorhead. As I said, this will finish up the flood mitigation.
Thank you. Any questions on 1051? Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will talk to you later, Representative Lanning. I don't want to have you speak and stress your voice, but I have a couple questions, so yeah. That's okay.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hanson. And ever if folks have a situation like that where you'd like to catch somebody in private, feel free to do that. But if you find something out that you think you may want to let the whole committee know in a case like this when the bill's coming back or if it's laid over for possible, please feel free to share it either with us in committee the next time or electronically through Ms. Sipko. Representative Lanning, House File 2020.
With respect to both of these projects, I want to remind everyone that for every dollar that we invest in flood mitigation, DNR tells us that we will save $4 in flood damage costs, cost the local government, state government, federal government. And so if we were to provide an investment of $10, $20 million, that really we're saving costs on the road four times that amount. The other project, thank you, is to finish up the city of Moorhead's flood mitigation. as you know, flooding has been plaguing our community for many years. We have made very substantial progress in better protecting the city. This will finish the job. This will enable us to complete the acquisitions that are necessary to get property out of harm's way and to put in place the additional infrastructure required to protect the city. Members, I want to tell you that the language you have before you would authorize some of that $20 million to go towards the diversion project. We are taking that out. We are not going to request any funding for the diversion. And so the $20 million would go totally towards finishing up the flood mitigation project for the city of Moorhead.
Thank you. I don't see any questions, Representative Lanning. Thank you for coming in. We appreciate you bringing both those bills forward. We'll lay them over for possible inclusion. Representative Keel, you're going to be the last one we're going to hear today, and members, we will not be coming back tonight. I know that breaks everybody's heart. Representative Keel. Thank you, Representative Lanning. We appreciate it. You know, you've worked hard on that project for your community. We appreciate it. Representative Keel, welcome. House File 2372, we're just laying them over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before I get started with this bill, just one quick plug. Look for your emails. The City of Oslo is going to send you some information, background information, and a YouTube link to see what happens when they're flooded.
So well, we look forward to that. Thank you, Representative Keel.
It's very interesting and graphic. Thank you very much. The legislature established the wetland replacement program for transportation projects in 1996. And the state level of funding was a result of the stakeholders' consensus that resulted in the wetland regulatory reforms. Under this program, the local road authorities are required to report wetlands lost due to local government road construction. The wetlands are then replaced by the state through the Board of Water and Soil Resources using state-supplied bonding funds. Without continued funding of this program through state bonding, the requirement to replace these wetlands becomes an unfunded mandate to the counties, who will have to pay for the wetland replacements with transportation dollars as well as administer the program. A possible result of this would be an increase in property taxes at a time when citizens are struggling to keep their own budgets afloat. All of the stakeholders, including the Association of Minnesota Counties, the League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota Intercounty Association, Minnesota Association of Townships, and the Minnesota County Engineers agree on the benefits of this program and the need to permanently fund it. Thank you. I have Mr. Vanosik here also.
Welcome, Mr. Vanosik, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Vanosik, and I represent the Minnesota Intercounty Association, which is a group of 13 counties, five of which are in the metropolitan area. The other eight are in the greater Minnesota around regional centers. Representative Keel has, I think, done a good job of summarizing what the local road wetland replacement program is all about. It has, as she said, been in existence since 1996. The legislature has consistently provided funding for this program, and the reason why the legislature set it up is without it, without having Bowser run this program, you would have, in the case of counties, 86 different counties with 86 different engineers having to become wetland mitigation experts and try to replace any wetlands that are displaced by local road construction projects. We feel that this program has produced more cost-effective, better located, and higher quality wetlands than previously was the case. And so we would ask that you include it in your recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Vanosik. Thank you, Representative Keel. I don't see any questions for either one of you, so I appreciate it. Wrap up, Representative Keel.
Just one point. There was a letter sent out by the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus that you have in your packet, and it just, one of my county engineers, wrote a note in there just to reinforce what we need. So I thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Keel and Mr. Vanosik. We appreciate you coming in. Members, we made it through to the third page. Representative Hackbart, could you move the minutes?
I would.
Yeah. Discussion to the minutes? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved. Members, I think what we'll do, the plan is to spend tomorrow doing Representative Hackbart's game and fish bill, but I think we'll bring Representative Johnson in first, have him quickly do his House File 1950. It's a bonding bill. And then we will go to Representative Hackbart's game and fish bill. But we actually only have, it looks like, five. And then we may just need to hear from DNR for a minute on bonding. So if we do game and fish in the first hour or something, even hour and 15 minutes, we potentially wouldn't have to come back tomorrow night. I know some of you are, Representative Purcell, Representative Hancock, Representative Fabian, Anderson, are all wondering if your significant others are getting dug out. So if you can go anywhere near the efficiency of today, I think we'll potentially be able to let you guys go home in a timely manner tomorrow. That would be my hope. Questions? We actually have 2 minutes to kill here. Any discussion? Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, thank you for clarifying the categorization of the funds and the math.
Discussion. Representative Hansen.
Happy to do so.
Okay, sounds good. Members, we're adjourned.